on the last World Series of 2008, if I understand correctly. He has seen it. On top of that, I know of a number of portable devices for watching over-the-air broadcast television that are in the process of being created as we speak. There are people who are demanding television reception capability on the screen of their iPod or their the BlackBerry, you know, the cell phone. There are people who want that little box in their pocket to do everything, and television reception is just one of them. I'll admit that a certain percentage of the people are watching a canned program or listening to canned programs in their car. I listen to over-the-air broadcast radio from my automobile. Maybe I'm a rarity. I bet you Mel does it too. Let's see what Howard number 2 in Flushing is doing. I bet you've seen people on Watchmen, Howie. W2HWW, K2RIW.
K3JX.
Eric recognized. Howard first.
I'll say hello and I'll give it to Eric. Dick, a lot of people are using streaming. A lot of stuff is not over conventional air. A lot of people are using their Apple iPod. A lot of people are using all kinds of devices. A lot of people are using Wi-Fi. I use Wi-Fi radio in my house. I have a box that's connected to the Internet by streaming. There's a lot of Internet video out there. So a lot of people today are getting their, you know, their ball games, their movies, and whatever else that they download over the Internet and listening to live streams using T-Mobile or whatever, or G3 or G4 technology. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, just wanted to agree with Howie HWW on that. He's right. I think what you're going to see in the future is that they're probably going to need more bandwidth and more frequencies for like these BlackBerry's Storms or the either 3 or 4G generation devices. And I believe we here in the United States are a bit behind Asia and Europe on that. And but that's, I guess, a different subject matter. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, let's see what Eric has got to say. I mean, Eric, KE2EJ. An earlier question we asked you, Eric, is number one, if I wanted to watch digital over-the-air broadcast from my moving vehicle, my limousine, so in the back of the limousine, there's a guy there with a lot of money in his pocket, and he wants a really classy limousine, and he wants to watch digital over-the-air broadcast television while he tools down the expressway at 60 or 70 miles an hour. Right now, I think the available converter boxes cannot keep up with that. If he drove 10 miles an hour, I think it can. However, I think the chipsets that will be coming out in the future will be able to do their equalizing a little bit more rapidly. They may do it. And I think you've told us there's a capability of the digital system to transmit to receive a lower resolution digital channel that doesn't require quite as much adaptation, equalization. There's a couple of subjects that you can talk about. Talk about anything you want to, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, we have enhanced 8BSB, or EBSB as they call it, and that uses, that can be either two symbols, four symbols, and I've actually seen in a limousine television reception while in motion, experimentally in Las Vegas. If you were to tune now to what we call Channel 55 and put a spectrum analyzer on it, you will actually see a weird-looking digital signal there. That's why Channel 55 no longer transmits on analog. Actually, throughout the entire country, a company called Qualcomm paid them several $1 million to vacate early, so they could put their system together, which is receivable on some cell phones. EVSB, it's good. 8VSB, M/H. The H stands for handheld, the M stands for mobile. But what Qualcomm has their own system, and there's other competing systems. If you buy VCast from Verizon, you literally get real-time reception of several different channels. Don't forget, you're getting a tiny little picture. We only transmit, 240 by 180. And that gets you real-time into your little handheld device. Throughout the country, all the Channel 55s have been bought up, and some transmitters are actually on the air transmitting that stuff. So So the handhelds will have a menu of selections which are currently in that stream. Of course, it's, you know, MPEG-4, actually it's AVC, Advanced Video Codec, and as the codecs get, as compression gets better too, you'll be able to stuff more stuff in that space. So, it's there now, although full resolution that you want to put on your big screen, it ain't really going to happen for a while yet, although your buddy out there in Texas is working on a system that helps make the antennas smart. He actually helped design the protocol for that system, from what he told me. And there's progress in that neighborhood.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, we lost the last 20 seconds, Eric. But I was hearing you on the input, and you're nice and loud. The Channel 55, done by Qualcomm across the whole United States. Qualcomm is a very smart company. Almost everything they touch turns to gold. So I think you're saying they've made an investment in a kind of digital television transmission on Channel 55, which has this two symbol or four symbols instead of eight symbols, two level or four level, if I understand correctly. So if I watch Channel 55 right now, I think you're telling me I will not get a 1080i, so I'll get a slightly lower resolution digital picture, which is capable of being received from a moving vehicle. Is that sort of what I've heard, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
Almost, not quite. They're using CRFDM, so first of all, you're not going to pick it up. And second of all, it's not going to be 1080i, it's going to be a small, small picture. It's going to be 240 by 180. Very low bit rates. And in that space that they transmit, they stuff, I think, is a 6 channels or 8 channels or 10 channels of video. And as the compression schemes get better, it will get even further, you know, you'll get further improvements in bandwidth and that constant channel spacing. What I said about the 2 and the 4 symbols is enhanced 8BSB or EBSB or 8BSB M/H, and that's intended for the broadcasters to compete and offer their services to cell phones, iPods, Blackberries, that kind of thing. So that's coming, and the 8BSB is the full bandwidth picture, which happens simultaneously over the same channel. So by interleaving where the symbols are and where they're being sliced, or where the queue crossovers, you know, zero crossing comes around, is in a different place for the 2 and the 4 VSB than it is for the 8 VSB, so they can actually be concurrent on the same channel, on the same time, and fit in that 6 megahertz worth of bandwidth. And the showings that they had at the NAB showed a moving vehicle where you actually get pretty decent reception, although it's very low bit rates, so. But you don't need big bit rates for a tiny little screen. K2RW, K2J.
Interesting. Are you telling me the 2 VSB, the 4 VSB, and the 8 VSB that are being simultaneously transmitted for these experiments that you're describing, and maybe Channel 55 is doing it, are those 2, 4, and 8 VSBs orthogonal to each other, and they're in the exact same frequency region? Is there any sacrifice in the 8 VSB resolution that takes place when you're simultaneously transmitting 2 and 4 VSB? Over to you, Eric.
There's no sacrifice to the 8 VSB. So if you're getting a 1080i signal on channel 4 or channel 7, while they're transmitting 2 VSB and 4 VSB, think of it as... it's easy to explain, sort of, in terms of COFDM. It's all orthogonal. But you know that the symbols show up in the display. Now my brain is losing it. Right. I'm looking for the word. This, in the display where you see the dots. Oh, dummy, it's not thinking right. There's spaces between where the data points on the symbols are. And you can put the stuff in the spaces. It's really, if you're thinking of a 360-degree cycle, if you're transmitting one symbol has a four bits in it, okay, you would have, around that circle, you'd have a dot at 0 degrees, 90 degrees, 180 degrees, and 270 degrees, which leaves you spaced in between them, where you could put another dot. Give me the word back, Dick. My mind isn't working. K2RW, K2J.
That sounds like a kind of interstitial diffusion in the time domain. Go ahead.
Yeah, but when you see that cluster, what the heck do you call that?
You're talking about the, stand by now. It used to be called the constellation diagram test set. Go ahead.
Thank you. That's, I don't know why I couldn't come up with the word, but that's the word I'm looking for. In the constellation. There's spaces in the constellation, and really all about time. And when you do the decoding, that's where in 8BSB, even though you see this nice flat line, if you were to take microsecond snapshots of it, you would see the carrier information vectorally and amplitude-wise. So really a lot of that flat line that we see is noise. Most of it is wasted. It's only at the sample time that the data comes out. So you have plenty of space in between the sample times to do more stuff.
In the time domain, as well as the COFDM. Fantastic. That's why the word television ain't the same anymore. It's changing a lot. The word radar ain't the same anymore. I lived for 35 years in the world that was designing radars and radar countermeasures transmitters. And there was a fairly even war going on for most of the 35 years between the radar designer and the jamming designer. Nowadays, when you've got enough agility capability, the radar designer is winning the game, in my opinion. So some of those fancy techniques are now showing up in our television sets. We're talking about a lot of adaptability here, a lot of, what's the word I just used? By the way, you and I have got something else in common. The word constellation, my goodness, in the last 20 years, I was in conversations with people and I needed that word. Couldn't think of it. I had that problem a whole lot of times in the last 20 years. But the adaptability, the agility, the radar, agile. You know, you can have a radar that's now agile in pulse duration, pulse rep rate, chirp within the pulse, and so on. It just goes on and on and on. And so the radar designer is winning the game. Hey, Mel. What kind of a television aerial do you have on your house, Mel? You live so close to Empire, my guess is if you wanted to watch the news in the morning on your rabbit ears, the rabbit ears sits right on the set in the kitchen there on Dover Street. Is that true? K2KEY, K2LIW.
Well, this is K2KEY. When we moved into this house, we had to do a complete A to Z job. All the walls had to be opened up here and insulated and redone because this house is a super-duper, this little old house type of a job. So I think I got carried away with this little old house watching that and wound up doing a similar job on this house. So while I had everything open, I ran, put into every room, I ran a coax cable from up in the attic area. And up there I have two TV antennas actually inside the attic. And we only got a couple, two TVs really in the house here. Not much in the way of TV watches, but both of them get excellent reception of all the channels right now that are in existence. So this is where it stands right now. I did get one of those converter boxes, Dick. And it says at the end, you know, when it's programmed through, it says 30 channels received, Dick. So I guess we'll be satisfied because basically we just look to get the news and the weather in the morning before I go out, Dick, over.
Of those 30 channels that you receive on your converter box, is one of them really channel 61, which I think is called 13-2 or 13-3? Let me first turn it over to Eric, see if I got that right, and I wonder if you got that one. Eric first.
Yeah, 61 is WNET, 13-1 is 13-HD, 13-2 is 13-KID, and 13-3 is VEM-A.
So do you get 61 or 13 in those dash numbers, Mel, K2KEY, K2LIW?
I think if I only perused through it one time after I hooked it up, and I think I'm getting it. Everything that I had previously, except I'm getting a lot of these other weather channels. Not as also a channel that comes on and shows me a picture of some street in New York City. Looks like the approach, I think, to the tunnel, to the either the Midtown Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel, I'm not sure. And then these weather, constant weather broadcasting, and then there's I don't know, some other things that just said future on it, Dick, over.
Yeah, I'll tell you what they are.
Go ahead, Eric.
Channel 25, which is the Board of Education, actually it's now the City of New York's transmitter, on 24 they transmit, and they normally transmit the same thing that's on 25, on the DAT 1. And on their DAT 2, they have the New York City traffic system. It's constantly changing the images. Although he's got a bad audio problem, if you listen to the audio, it's got this horrible buzz in it. But Mr. Kim will take care of that one day. That's his system. NBC and ABC on the Dash 2. There's Weather Plus, which is NBC, and there's Eyewitness News Weather on ABC. On NBC, their 4.4 is a compilation of news and stuff. We broadcasted the news and some other things, and on 7, they also do the delayed broadcast of their news programs, but they also show other shows, so. Like during the Olympics, 4.4 had other venues going at the same time. Standard definition, of course, because they take up most of their space with the HD channel. The weather channels are mostly still images, usually they're small guys, so a lot of that stuff is under a megabit, and it doesn't take up too much room. CBS transmits the best picture, because they're strictly 1080i, they don't transmit anything else, and they give it their full bandwidth, so they do a good job. K2RW, K2 John.
In the future, will some of the other networks be doing that, in your opinion, Eric?
Well, that covers, and Fox, of course, the Fox is, they've got their HD as 5.1, and they have WWOR, which is channel 9, on the 0.2, and that's the standard definition, and the reverse is same on channel 9, where channel 9's HD is 9.1, and Fox's SD is on 9.2. PIX does a couple of different things. They actually feed the Spanish language audio. They assign one channel to that. It's the same video, but with Spanish language audio. And they also have, at times, I forget which music channel it is, but it's sort of like MTV on another one of their channels. And I told you what 13 does, and that pretty much covers what most folks are doing. If you tune into, I can't think of the name of it, but there's one... FME, they transmit their main channel, and then they have, like, the National Weather Service on another channel, the, you know, the 16255 audio. There's a couple of audio services. They run, like, about 8 channels, but most of them are audio only, so. There's those combinations of things, and if you go to other parts of the country, they'll actually, there's some places where there's on one channel, it'll be CBS, and then on the next sub-channel will be ABC. There's a number of stations around the country that are you know, that subscribe multiply to the various different networks. So you'll see different variations of it all over the place.
How many UHF channels are available? Eric, which are not the ordinary major networks, CBS, NBC, Fox, or PIX, and NET. If I go scanning to the UHF channels for digital television, are there 10 or 15 more of those available to me in the New York area? Go ahead.
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's FMU, there's LNY, which you could probably pick up with no problem, although the folks closer to the city would have an issue with that because their transmitter is east of you. Actually, I pick up NJN, which is from New Jersey. I pick up two of the channels. I also pick up Connecticut Public Television, CPTV. There's two Spanish language channels, there's a Korean channel, a whole bunch of stuff there. Nothing that I'd necessarily watch, but it's there.
Yeah, I think Korea used to be on UHF television 53. I think they moved to 27 or something like that, didn't they?
They're on 26 now.
Okay. Lots of stuff to watch. What you've got to make, Eric, I mean, Mel, is some kind of a tripod-like stand with a mast to it, with telescoping tubing, with an antenna on the top, a television aerial, with a rotator that can be set up on the beach, and in theory a certain amount of television UHF, I mean a certain amount of digital television DXing is possible from your beach. You don't have to watch just that particular ballgame. I'm kidding you a little bit. I know there's some other things you wanted to discuss, so go right ahead. K2KEY. Oh, wait a minute. Let's take a quick scan. If Paul is there and he wants to tell us anything on our space report. WS2N, if you're there. K2RIW.
Well, no, Dick, I just wanted to bring up the opportunity and spirit for 5 years instead of 3 months. Fighting a cold here, so I'm not gonna hang in there where... Making a transmission about the space report. Nothing big that came out. NASA, I think, is what, 50 years old or something, so we celebrated that. So I'm interested in hearing Mel's report. I looked for him on Monday night on 80 meters. I didn't find him because I was going to try to cheat and get ahead and try to figure out what this chart was all about. Hey, Mel, I drew it up on graph paper. It really looks good now. Back to you there, Dick. WS2N.
Yeah, when Mel left us last week, when he hit the witching hour, midnight, you were having us draw two sine waves, one that was approximately 90 degrees ahead of the other. And maybe you want to go back to that. It's your choice. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, a lot of people ask me about this. See, I got them in the emails. Please continue. We are very fascinated at what you're trying to teach us here. As far as 75 meters, I sort of thought it was a little bit of a hiatus from that group and all. I'm not going to get into... I'll let them all cool off a little bit, the number of them, because when I try to explain some of the things that we've discussed here, Dick, and I've in fact even told them to look at our amateurradio.tv, some of the comments came back. Let's put it this way, it got kind of colorful, and I finally gave up one night at 2 o'clock in the morning because I saw I wasn't going to get through and I couldn't, and the insults were getting, as I say, to the point where I think the, as you referred to them as the friendly candy company, was going to have a picnic with these guys because it got out of hand because the understanding of what's going on is, I don't know where some of this whitetail got started, but boy, oh boy, it is ridiculous what the statements were coming up, and I was trying to really swim against the tide, Dick, over.
Was this taking place on 20 meters, Mel? Go ahead. Or 80 meters?
Yeah, the 75-meter group. They sort of split off some agreeing with me and understanding, basically. At least they said so. I guess those were my friends. And these other guys that really went at me. First, then with a vicious attack and everything like that, you know, like things like making comments. But what do you want from a guy that runs Collins Equipment and he's not up to date, so he doesn't even know what he's talking about. On and on. I mean, it's hard to get to that. I'm just making a mild comment about what I heard after, you should hear after that, was the comment that, especially, I'm sorry I dragged you into this, Dick, because I told him that, listen to amateurradio.tv and by proxy, you got yourself, as they say, some remarks that's unbelievable, Dick. It's just ridiculous to go and even make any more comments about it right now. Over.
Yep. We have to take that with a grain of salt, Bill. There are a number of people out there that are somewhat unhappy with their life, particularly the way the economy is going these days, and they're out of work. So there are people that are unhappy with their life, and they'd like to make other people also unhappy because that they think is going to give them pleasure. I doubt it, but they're trying the experiment. So when you're into a controversial area, particularly standing wave ratio and things like that, reflective power on a transmission line, you can tell that Walt Maxwell, K2DU, W2DU, if you're an ARL member and you do a search on Maxwell, M-A-X-W-E-L-L, or W2DU, you see he's got a very nice series of articles in which he explains the flack he got into when he's working for RCA Astro Division in New Jersey, which became, I think, one of the space divisions. He was working on the Tyro satellite, and he was doing the impedance adaptation to a fairly yucky antenna. He was doing it on the transmitter end of the transmission line inside of the satellite, as opposed to doing the correction right at the tape antenna itself that folded up around the perimeter of the satellite. And various engineers in his organization said, that ain't going to work. And then he showed them that it's working. And some of them would see it working and still didn't believe it. He had quite a bit of flack. And I've had some conversations with him on that exact subject. So, highly misunderstood subject. You get a person who's got a strong enough opinion, he'll find an alternate explanation for anything you tell him as evidence of what you think is the truth. K2KEY, KQRIW.
Yeah.
K4IY.
Most definitely. Unbelievable. The statements that were flowing out were so ridiculous.
We'll get to you, Joe. Sorry, I forgot you.
They were saying them actually as like it was the gospel, but couldn't convince them with anything that I was able to quote, refer, references, or anything like that. It was just one insult after another. So I gave up, basically. All right, so I think we'll more or less continue with where I left off. I did make a little note here where I left off. Unless you have something else pending right now, maybe we can pick up on this. Over.
I think we should pick up on it. I forgot to pick up Joe, who signed in 15 minutes ago and wanted to say something. W-H-U-R-Y-Y. K-2-R-Y-W. You got it, Joe.
And I have such patience. You were talking about noise figure and about different things. What I want to understand, maybe just refresh me, maybe this is all I need about it. If you're talking about noise figure in a amplifier, preamplifier, amplifier, say take that for example, that noise figure is over the threshold of what the amplifier is capable of receiving versus its bandwidth. Is it, would that be correct or incorrect?
Okay. Every amplifier that you and I can put our hands on creates a little bit of noise in its front end that makes it not ideal. And what the amplifier, what you and I call noise, is anything that we didn't put into it. You and I tend to connect the antenna to an amplifier, and we want that thing coming down the cable to be the signal, and we want the amplifier to amplify that signal. But every realistic amplifier makes a little bit of noise at the same time. The exact definition of noise figure in decibels is 10 times the log of signal-to-noise ratio output divided by signal-to-noise ratio input. That's one of the definitions of noise figure. So if your amplifier was perfect, the signal-to-noise ratio going into the amp and coming out would be the same, just the signal would be stronger, and the noise would be stronger. Because every real antenna is also giving the amplifier some noise. There's noise everywhere when you've got a state-of-the-art receiver. Every 50 ohm resistor is making noise. Every resistor period is making noise, if it's not cryogenically cooled. So that's one definition. Another way of looking at it is that if you're working with laboratory equipment where everything's at room temperature, and you measure the sensitivity of your receiver, every decibel that you lower the noise figure of the receiver will be exactly one decibel improvement in receiver sensitivity. So 1 dB per dB of noise figure improvement at room temperature. However, when you get an antenna looking at cold sky and it's cryogenic, the dBs of improvement go up much faster. But that's a complicated issue. There you've got to calculate everything in degrees Kelvin and abandon decibels in order to come up with the right answer. So maybe those two pieces of information will help a little bit, Joe. Noise figure is not an easy one to understand. WA2RYY, K2RIW.
KC2QAQ.
Glenn recognized. Joe first.
Well, I was asking this in reference to not only the TV amplifiers we've been talking about, but say something used more for amateur purposes. An A²R preamp, for example, in UHF, typically they have a rated gain of 16 dB, and they have a noise figure of 0.5, and they have also a bandwidth of 40 megahertz.
Yeah, the bandwidth doesn't affect noise figure, believe it or not. And the preamplifiers that I use the most, either the 2-meter version or the 450 version of an AR² preamp, GESFET, half dB noise figure, regardless of what they're rated, they all produce darn close to 20 decibels of gain. But noise figure and bandwidth, believe it or not, are unrelated. Oh, I will admit that if I'm designing an amplifier and I come up with a design that's got 100 megs of bandwidth, and then I do something by the filters on the input and the output end of the amplifier to bring the 100 megs of bandwidth down to 10 megs of bandwidth, the good news is now I'm rejecting signals out of band that I care about. The bad news is that every filter you put in there to do that has some insertion loss. So in general, as you request filters of more and more narrow bandwidth, the insertion loss of the filter goes up, therefore the noise figure gets hurt. If I've got an amplifier with a 3 dB noise figure, and I put a piece of cable in front of it that's 100 feet long, we'll say, that has 1 decibel of loss, at the input of that cable with 1 dB of loss into a 3 dB amplifier, I've got a 4 dB noise figure. For room temperature measurements, again, pads and insertion loss of filters and whatever, on the input end, add directly dB per dB for noise figure. On the output of the amplifier, it's much less than that. An extra dB of attenuation on the output of the preamplifier might hurt your noise figure by 0.1 dB. And again, by using the cascaded noise figure formula that I gave you earlier, you can calculate that. Let's see what Glenn's got to say about all this. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the second half.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Actually, a different topic about HDTV for a second. But if you want to continue with this and come back to me later.
Go ahead. Well, we mix them all together, Glenn.
Here's an interesting question I've been wondering now. I know about the broadcast. After mid-February, they're going to be switching all over to all digital and getting rid of analog. And I know on the Verizon system with Fios and their TV that basically they've given out extra boxes for if you're using that Fios output so that if you had analog just on the regular cable lines, that they would give you these extra boxes so that you could get the digital service. Now, Cablevision, for people who have analog TVs on there, is there anybody out there that's aware of what's going to happen after February that if they just have a regular analog TV on Cablevision but no box, and will they still be able to get service, or are they going to have to do something else as well?
I'm going to pass it. Go ahead, Joe.
Somebody I know works directly for Cablevision. I asked exactly that same question. What's going to happen after February 17, 2009 when the broadcast is going digital? Is the basic service on cable going to go digital? Because I don't have family cable. I just have basic service. I was told no. They're not going to go digital. They'll still be transmitting analog TV over your cable TV system. probably on all the channels that are currently regular NTSC format, it'll still be the same arriving at your television set. But you never know with Dolan what he's got up his sleeve.
But if you owned one of the premium services that had high definition digital capability, in theory, I've already got a digital capable box that does the converting owned by Cablevision in the house, and that should continue to work. Is that the way you see it, Joe? Go ahead.
If you need an I.O. box or H4HD reception or some of their digital scramble channels in some of the family packages, the high end of the packages and so forth, that will remain the same. If you have a TV plugged in without any converter box at all, the channels you can currently get now in analog will still remain the same. You will be able to get them again in analog after February 17, 2009. Is that what you're looking for?
That's part of it. And if I had a digital capable TV set, and I plugged the cable from Cablevision directly into it, with no converting box in between, I think I'm going to get both analog and digital services. I think the 2 through 13 will be analog, and almost everything else will be digital, is my guess. What do you think, Joe?
I can't say that on Cablevision, but I can say this on Verizon Fios. A friend of mine has that service, and he has a converter box for each TV set, because they don't broadcast any analog stuff at all. His digital TV, I think he said it was capable of getting channels directly without the converter box itself. I think he did say he tried that. But as far as reception on cable, vision system, as far as decoding the digital, I don't know how, if it's the same compatibility as what a standard digital TV wants to see coming into it.
There you go. Go ahead, Eric.
All sets that are sold with tuners have to have ATSC, NTSC, and many of them have QAM for cable. The ones with QAM, the later model ones, have something called a slot in it for a cable card. That way, when you subscribe to subscription services like HBO and stuff, you don't need a converter box. But it doesn't work with every cable system. Some cable systems have chosen not to go that route.
If I buy a television set 6 months from now, because there still are some low-power TVs, translator TVs, stations and whatever that are still using NTSC, analog television, if I buy a digital capable TV set 6 months from now, do you believe it'll also have NTSC analog capability? Over to you, Eric.
Absolutely. The low-power TV stations don't have to do anything for 3 more years. And also, there's still a lot of DVD players, VCRs, et cetera, that you can still plug into them. So if you see a TV set with a DTV logo on it, it's got an ATSC tuner in it, and every ATSC tuner at this stage of the game also goes analog.
Okay, let me ask you the reverse question now. Do you see sometime in the future when analog tuner, analog capability, in a digitally capable set, the analog capability might disappear? Well, because so many people have got a video cassette recorder that comes out with channel 3 analog, but for that reason, among others, they'll have to continue analog for a lot of years to come. Over to you, Eric.
I would guess that 10 years from now, you won't see any more sets with NTSC tuners in them. If you were to buy, say, a Samsung converter box up until, say, a year ago, you could get them that were just digital only. They didn't do the code analog, but they just pass through. You turn the box off and you get analog.
Now, you said the word digital tuner or analog tuner. I'd like to believe that the front-end so-called tuner for either digital or analog is essentially the exact same tuner. It's when the signal comes down to an IF strip and starts going through that chipset, that's where either NTSC or digital TV, ATSC, demodulation takes place. Am I correct on that one, Eric? Go ahead.
Comes out of any tuner, whether it's digital or analog, it's 45 megahertz. Do what you want with it at that point.
Okay, so when you say the word digital tuner or analog tuner, I think you really meant an analog capable set. The tuner itself sounds to me it's going to be the same little silvery box, which is about the size of a pack of cigarettes these days. That's the real tuner. I think that's going to stay almost the same. See what Glenn's got there. If Glenn got the answer he was looking for, KC2QIQ, K2LIW in the tech net.
A WB2HWW with a question for Eric, please.
Howard recognized. Glenn first. You got it, Glenn. Okay, maybe Glenn's not there. Howie, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know, I haven't looked at one yet. Besides having an RF output to channel 3, you know, to go right to your TV set, are these boxes also have output to go to your TV? Like, I have an old TV sitting around here that has a video and audio jack. You know, I have a left and right jack and a video jack. Will there be boxes available that will provide a video output, baseband video, from the digital signal?
I am guessing that all the available current digital converter boxes have a whole lot of different output connectors. An F connector for channel 3, RF, kinds of composite video and audio, left and right, and also these fancy connectors that have everything all together in one DIN connector. I am guessing most of them have that. Is that true, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
K2RIW, KE2EJ, video comes out of the video jack, audio comes out of the audio jack. Video is still video, it doesn't matter whether it's low def or high def, but the converter boxes only make standard NTSC, never twice the same color, and it's still got sync pulses and all that stuff, and that's how you get it into your TV set. You can either do it by RF or do it by video. Do it by video, it's cleaner.
Absolutely. So what you're saying, Eric, is these boxes have RCA connectors on it. They have the yellow and the red, if I remember the colors right, they had a yellow, a red, and whatever, a white RCA jack on it, correct?
Yep. And also, well, the cheaper converters don't have it, but the more expensive ones have blue, green, and red RCA jacks for doing component video, which is even better than NTSC.
That's RGB. That's RGB, like you had going into a video game. Okay. And then you have the DIP connector, which is S-Video, which is called Super Video.
Well, the difference between what you're calling RGB, it really isn't RGB. It's Y, R minus Y, B minus Y. The difference between that and S-Video. S-Video breaks it up into chroma and luminance, meaning that it still has this little vector modulator in it. It makes 3.58 and sends that separately from the luminance, so you don't get the chroma crawl from it. But the best way is the component video, which is luminance, R minus luminance, and B minus luminance. And those are three baseband signals without any subcarrier information, and it's the cleanest way to go.
All right, but the cheap, the one that the government gives you, where you use a $25 or a $50 coupon, they just come out with composite video. They don't give you that all that other fancy stuff.
If you're buying a $40 tuner, you don't get it. If you're buying something a little more expensive, like a $60 tuner, you might get a component out of it. And most of them that do component usually do S-Video, but given the choice, forget the S-Video.
You don't like S-Video for what reason, Eric?
Not too, like in a hotel, if they're not going to change all the TVs and they're getting off the air, they might just use a video modulator inside of a building and then just remodulate it. Okay, just curious. WD2HWW, over to Dick.
Yeah, Eric, what's wrong with the S-Video connector? And I think there's even a more modern composite connector beyond that. Over to you, Eric.
What's wrong with it? Nothing's wrong with it, except that I would much rather have a baseband signal that goes from DC to 5 megahertz than have to have reduced bandwidth video that's embedded in a subcarrier that you have to demodulate. The S-Video connector actually has two pieces of coax in it, one which carries the baseband luminance from 0 to 5 megahertz. The other carries a signal that's 3.58 at its widest point. It's only 1.25 megahertz wide, and it's INQ. Then you have to take it apart.
But still, if I transmit real video between the converter box and the TV, and it's not remodulated on an RF carrier, I think I cannot ahead in fidelity. Is that true?
No, the best way to come out ahead in fidelity is to use components. Use the baseband luminance. Instead of having to have a subcarrier that's demodulated, you know, essentially you're talking about an AM transmitter, having the blue component subtracted from the luminance and having the red component subtracted from luminance. That is the better way to go because there's no modulation and demodulation going on.
Yeah, I think that's the R minus B and the R minus Y and B minus Y are the real vectors, if I understand correctly. I think I've asked this question before and I don't remember the answer. Assume right now that you're transmitting analog television and your peak envelope power is 60 kilowatts of vertical sync pulse maximum, blacker than black. And assume you were using that exact same transmitter to maximum capability. I know there's a lot of things that change here, but if you were using that exact same transmitter and it had enough linearity, had enough intercept point, and you were transmitting ATSC digital TV with it, 1090i or whatever, and in the case of the analog signal, I could use something that is microseconds long to detect the fact that the absolute peak envelope power was 60 kilowatts. And if I'm using something that is some number of nanoseconds long to measure the peak envelope power of a digital signal coming out of the exact same transmitter, make a guess for me as to what peak envelope power of a Bart's head I might see. K2KEY, K2LIW.
I think you're asking me, Dick.
Yes, I am. I may have used the wrong call letters. I'm sorry about that. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
All right, let me give you a practical response to that. My analog transmitter is 60 kilowatts of peak envelope power at sync tip. Don't forget, we transmit positive sync, negative video. Although when you go into a video device, it's negative video, negative sync and positive video. But anyway, if I take and use one tube will generate 30 kilowatts. If I use one tube, one cabinet, because you remember seeing two cabinets there, I can switch back and forth between ATSC and NTSC. So in ATSC, my peak envelope power would be somewhere around 8 kilowatts. Does that answer your question?
One cabinet, 30 kilowatt capability in ATSC measures, I think you said, 10 kilowatts, if I heard that correctly. Whereas that one cabinet NTSC, 30 kilowatts peak envelope power. Is that what I think you just said? Go ahead.
One cabinet NTSC, regular old analog, 30 kilowatts. That same cabinet ATSC digital would be between 8 and 9 kilowatts.
Is that a back off in order to get linearity? That the peak envelope power is a lower number? What's the easiest explanation for where the lower 8 or 9 kilowatts as opposed to 30 kilowatt capability? Where's the 8 or 9 coming from, Eric? Is some of that a back off to get higher linearity?
Actually, no. If you consider the peak envelope power of something that's about maybe 150 kilohertz in bandwidth, okay, that I have a, or if I do, you know, if I did what it just to do to CW, I'd get on a single frequency about 30, a little more than 30-something kilowatts. As I take that single frequency now and spread the whole damn thing across 6 megahertz, what gives?
Okay, if I, there's two different ways I could spread it, and I've done both of these when it comes to jammers. If I'm doing it by taking one single voltage-controlled oscillator, so that every instant of time there's only one oscillator there, and I swish it back and forth with some kind of a pseudo-random Lauderdale-shaped noise modulation on the VCO characteristic. I'm taking the one carrier, I'm swishing it around all kinds of elaborate ways, and I'm making a jamming spot 6 megacycles wide. I could make that, with all those frequencies present, 30 kilowatts. If I'm doing it by the opposite technique, I'm putting a whole bunch of individual oscillators in there, which either are or are not coherent with each other, but periodically they do have phases that line up, then yes, I've got to back off something fierce. So I think you're telling me you have the equivalent of individual oscillators, not a single oscillator that's swishing around in the frequency and or phase domain. K2KEY? Oh, here we go. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
All right, let me add another thing to this. If I'm running 28,000 volts, say I'm drawing 1 amp, or you can calculate that exactly, and that's the limit of my power supply, and I am creating a broadband signal. When you take a single oscillator and move it around like a sweep, if you take a snapshot, you really have one frequency occurring at one point in time of that snapshot. When you take a snapshot of the digital signal, you're actually seeing the RF in that entire 6 megahertz of bandwidth. And if my power supply is constant, where's all that energy?
Okay. So you're telling me that the ATSC signal going into the exact one cabinet, 30 kilowatt or so capability, draws the exact same 28 kilovolts at 1 ampere, runs at close to the same efficiency, you haven't said that yet, in other words, it's generating the same amount of heat, but out comes a peak envelope power sensed at the nanosecond time period. I've got a peak envelope detector that can register that peak in, let me pick a number, 5 nanoseconds, and sample and hold it as to what the highest peak was. You're saying I would only see 8 or 9 kilowatts. And yes, there's a bit of a mystery here as to 28 kilovolts and 1 ampere going in. Okay, let me put it another way. If I took that 8 or 9 kilowatts of peak envelope power ATS signal out and put it into a true RMS watt meter, how many watts would I measure, Eric? Go ahead.
If it sums everything together, true RMS, it's going to come back to around that 30 kilowatt number.
Okay. I'm slowly beginning to believe that you're running the exact same efficiency, the exact same amount of heating. If I wanted to say how many individual carriers are in there, if I used a very narrow spectrum analyzer, scanned very slowly across the box head, and picked out individual frequencies very slowly, how many individual frequencies would I see, or would it be essentially contiguous? In other words, there's no individual carriers in there, no matter how narrow a scan with a resolution bandwidth I use on the spectrum analyzer. Over to you, Eric.
All right, to give you a sample, a way that you could actually see it now, if you were to take a spectrum analyzer and look at not even the RF signal, look at an NTSC baseband signal, tune around 3.58 megahertz, and look at the spectrum of just the color subcarrier, and look at how much space that takes up. I think you'll get the idea, because it's a form of vector modulation.
Okay. In the case of the 3.579545, with a very narrow spectrum analyzer, I think I would see individual frequency components spaced by something like 17 kilohertz, the horizontal scan rate. Over to you, Eric.
No, you'd see something in the order of a megahertz and a quarter.
Okay. I'm using an extremely narrow scan width, resolution bandwidth spectrum analyzer, looking at individual frequency components, which really is a kind of repetitiveness of the signal, cyclicity. I'm really measuring cyclicity. That chrominance signal does something in a cyclic manner on each individual scan line. Therefore, there's going to be individual frequency components that tend to be emphasized, is what I think is true. Over to you, Eric.
All right, if you're doing something with, say, a couple hundred hertz resolution, yeah. But you'll find it over plus or minus, say, plus and minus 750 kHz on each side. Because we're also talking about the bandwidth of the varying, not only phase angle, but amplitude.
Okay, I'm now taking an ATS signal into a 10 hertz resolution bandwidth spectrum analyzer. It's going to take me a month of Sundays to scan across that whole 6 megs. But if I scanned across that whole 6 megs with a 10 hertz resolution bandwidth 8566 Hewlett-Packard spectrum analyzer, would I see individual apparent frequency components, or would it be a, except for the pilot tone, would it be a pure horizontal line even at a 10 hertz resolution bandwidth? And I'm looking at an hour's worth of material. Over to you, Eric.
I dare you to try it. You'll see it as a horizontal line. Actually, you'll see it rolling off on both sides, but you'll still see it as a horizontal line.
Okay. So it doesn't seem to have individual frequency components. That's part of what's going on with the constellation of modulation going on. The 8 VSB, the trellis, the overlapping of the digital, the randomizer. My goodness, it's a complicated system. I was making a prediction earlier that the converter boxes we can now buy that sit on top of our set, the $40 or the $60 box, were slapped together in a hurry by Motorola, for instance, a couple of years ago, when the commitment for February 17th was made, that those digital circuits that are in that box in a digital-capable TV set occupy nowhere near as much printed circuit board space. I am predicting that the converter box that could be built 6 months from now, a separate converter box, could be a little bit bigger than a pack of cigarettes. Am I completely wrong on that one, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, you're way out. Have you ever seen a USB key, a flash drive?
Okay, so I think you're saying the memory functions are where the board space is coming from.
No, you can go to Micro Center or any of the computer stores and buy a hot dog down the street from you. It looks like a USB key. It has an S connector on the end of it. Hello.
Okay, that little plug-in card, the PCMCIA-like card that plugs in the side of my laptop, that is a whole digital converter. Wow. And I think you're saying that's taking up 10 square inches of PC board space. Is that true?
That PCMCIA card is about 10 times bigger than a USB key. USB plug, you know what's on the end of your mouse? It ain't much bigger than that. You can get a HD hot dog card. Don't forget you're using the computer to do the display. I mean, but everything that you need is in that little freaking thing that you can put in your pocket. It's got an F connector on the back. It's got a regular USB plug on the front. It's not bigger than, you know, the small thumb flash drives. It's a little fatter, but it's about the same size. And that's got all the RF stuff in it. That's got the equalizer in it. That's got the trellis decoder. That's got the Viterbi. That's got all the other stuff that you need. It actually makes the IMQ, brings it out into a digital form, passes it through the equalizer and all that stuff, and sends it into the computer's USB port, which is a serial port.
Wow. Okay. This all came about while you were away there for a while, where Mel was telling us that a significant number of people, in his opinion, that sit on the beach in Brooklyn on a sunny day with their Watchman TV set, with rabbit ears, watching the ball game. And he wanted to know, do they have the capability to continue to use their Watchman, a battery-operated TV set on the beach, under the umbrella, and watch the ball game in, let's say, September of 2009. If they got one of these little bitty things that you just described to me as a digital converter in the front end, and with some rewiring and whatever, in order to be able to come out with a format that a Watchman can tolerate, would they be able to have a battery-operated digital set, even though that product maybe doesn't exist yet? Over to you, Eric, KQLIW.
As I said earlier, there's about six or seven now portable TVs, battery-operated TVs on the market now.